Countrywide on ABC Radio.
I'm absolutely calling on the Deputy Prime Minister to pay attention to his own report.
Growers work from sun up to sun down, so...
Countrywide.
We need to speak to these growers 1 o'clock in the morning.
And to actually act on behalf of the farmers.
They're going to get it from the Yanks or the French or whoever. So let's get our foot in the door and let's be the first.
Countrywide. The politics of food and farming on ABC Radio.
And hello there, I'm Nikolai Bailharts. On the program today, farmers say they're angry about the penalty given to animal rights activists who stole goats from a cafe in Victoria.
The way this has played out and the way that the message that this has sent has actually endorsed people to go out and essentially break the law, because the worst thing that can happen to you is you're going to get a fine that's going to cost you less than a cup of coffee.
And the challenge of wrapping vegetables in plastic. They extend shelf life, but there are concerns about how much plastic is now being used. That's to come to start today, though. Dollar milk is no more. The cheapest milk in Australia became 10% more expensive this week with the announcement that Coles and Aldi would join Woolworths in charging more for milk. All supermarkets are promising to pass on the extra money to dairy farmers in full. But how did we get here? Warwick Long reports on the long, drawn-out dollar milk debate.
Australia Day 2011 was the genesis of dollar milk. It began as a marketing ploy by Coles, who were actually matching a price set by new, smaller player, Aldi, who nobody really took much notice of at the time. Woolworths quickly followed, and dollar milk was set. The outrage from dairy farmers was immediate, and for more than 8 years, they've been fighting to end the practice of selling milk so cheaply. Woolworths were the first to move when 1 month ago they announced they would permanently charge more for milk. Coles and Aldi then came under fire from dairy farmers and the Agriculture Minister to do the same. They refused. The Agriculture Minister, David Littleproud, even went so far as to suggest people boycott the supermarkets. And there have been yet more protests from farmers at supermarket doors. Today, Coles and Aldi change. Both will now charge more for milk. Coles have said in a statement,
"In support of Australia's dairy farmers, Coles supermarkets will increase the price of 2-litre and 3-litre Coles brand milk by 10 cents per litre starting from the 20th of March. Coles is currently paying dairy processors the highest farm gate milk prices in 4 years without passing on the added expense to customers. However, it is clear that many dairy farmers, particularly in northern Victoria, New South Wales and Queensland, are struggling as a result of drought. As an interim measure, Coles will increase the price of 2 litres of Coles brand milk to $2.20 and 3 litres of Coles brand milk to $3.30 in most Coles supermarkets."
Aldi quickly released a statement following the move.
"From Wednesday the 20th of March 2019, Aldi Australia will increase the price of 2 litre and 3 litre Farmdale fresh milk by 20 cents and 30 cents respectively, with these additional proceeds being passed on to dairy farmers in full. This solution is a short-term measure and will allow our processors to immediately pass additional funds to their dairy farmers outside of normal seasonal adjustments at the conclusion of the current season."
Australians drink 1.2 billion litres of milk per year. Approximately 696 million litres was sold as dollar milk through supermarkets last year. Even at 10 cents per litre more, that will mean close to an extra $70 million being injected into the dairy industry. And they didn't have to. Coles have a contract with Saputo, the buyer of Murray Goulburn, to supply the milk that's usually sold for a dollar until 2024. So the product could have stayed. Small, family-based dairy processing operation Kai Valley Dairy in northern Victoria supplies Aldi with some of its dollar milk product that sells under the label Farmdale. Despite that business relationship, Wayne Mulcahy, who is a director of Kai Valley Dairies, says the end of dollar milk is fantastic for the dairy industry.
It's a great day for the dairy industry. The dollar milk hopefully is now behind us. Given the tough times that all farmers are going through at the moment with the drought conditions, it's great that the supermarkets have all now been able to recognise that by increasing the price.
You supply Aldi with some of their Farmdale milk, their dollar milk. Will you be passing on the increased price to your farmers?
Absolutely. Yes. No, Aldi made it very clear, and we totally agree with it, that the full 10 cents that the consumers are paying extra for the milk will flow directly to the milk suppliers.
Wayne Mulcahy from Kye Valley Dairies. So what do farmer lobby groups make of this news that $10 litre milk will now be the norm? Warwick Long spoke with CEO of Australian Dairy Farmers, David Innall, who says he couldn't be happier.
Look, this is just fantastic news. It's a great next step after we saw Woolworths lead the way this time last month. We really now just have IGA as the next step, and we look like we might be there.
How, I suppose, significant for your industry is it to have an end to dollar milk?
Look, you know, it's just been a flagship project for this industry for now 8 years, and there's been a lot of organisations right across the country that have put an enormous amount of effort into just keeping the message going, just keep banging the drum, the importance of dairy farming, the importance of dairy communities, dairy farming families. They can't have their price, the price of their product just frozen at the back of their store forever. And now it looks like we're seeing this change.
Will you make sure this extra money, this extra 20 cents for 2 litres, 30 cents for 3 litres, is passed on to farms?
Absolutely, we'll do everything we can. We will be going back to Coles today, and we will make that contact and just see what role they would like us to play. We presume, of course, that they have the auditing in place and those relationships with their processors that are supplying the milk. No doubt they have developed a system and prepared an auditing approach that ensures that money is passed back in full, and we'll play whatever role we can to ensure that that occurs.
Will the extra money save dairy farms in a difficult season?
There's no doubt it's a good start, and we know that there's many other dairy farmers who aren't supplying these contracts who are still in a tough spot. It's only a few hundred dairy farmers, I understand, that will be supplying Coles contracts. There are many others in the industry that are involved in supplying milk that builds other products in the dairy cabinet. So there's a much wider and deeper conversation around the value of dairying that we're still to have. But this was always in the way to having that discussion with retailers. And now it looks like this might be behind us, and now we can move on and have other discussions.
Although the wording in these announcements from both Coles and Aldi is very interesting. Coles has described it as an interim measure. Aldi talks about this measure being around for the milk season, which ends at the end of the financial year. Is dollar milk really dead, or is this just an interim measure whilst there was some bad press on these supermarkets?
So the conversation that we've had with Coles indicates that this is just a general price rise, and we did not get an indication from them that this was something that would change. My understanding of the word interim, I think I may have used another word if it was me, but I believe interim means that this is not necessarily going to save the industry, those that are doing it tough. It's a great start, but there are other challenges that the industry has, more structural challenges that we understand need to be considered. And that's what Coles has always said in our discussions with them, that this is not the answer, but it's a very important next step, as we said.
So that's the farmer side of the equation. There's also consumers who will be paying more from today. Some will be disappointed with that. What do you say to those people?
Well, we would say that milk was more expensive than this 10 years ago. So milk actually went down to a dollar a litre back there in Australia Day 2011. So even if milk was to increase its CPI, it is still cheaper than it used to be in terms of those store branded products. So we would say to consumers that we think it's important for milk, like every other food product in the supermarket, to continue to move up in price as wages do, and it's an important and critical support for those farmers supplying that milk.
David Innall, the CEO of Australian Dairy Farmers. And you are listening to Countrywide on ABC Radio. My name is Nikolai Bailharts. Well, they say you learn something new every day, and today's fact for you can be that carrots are the star performer when it comes to Australian vegetable exports, and they're worth big money, almost $100 million last year. The lobby group AusVeg has just released data on veggie exports for 2018, and it says Singapore, Japan and Thailand have all seen significant growth, but interestingly, China has not. Michael Coote is National Manager of Export Developments with AusVeg.
We are really encouraged
to see that there's been some strong growth across a number of different Asian and Middle Eastern markets, but also a number of different vegetable products or commodities that are grown across the country have seen some really positive growth.
Where are you seeing the biggest growth occur?
Well, for the first time, we've sold over $50 million worth of Australian fresh vegetables into Singapore, which is up about 7.5% on 2017. But we're seeing really positive growth in a number of Asian markets, such as Japan, Malaysia, Hong Kong, and some Southeast Asian countries. And also there's some consistent growth in some of the traditional Middle Eastern markets for products like carrots out of Western Australia.
Well, on that note, broadly speaking, which crops are performing the best or are kind of growing the most when it comes to exports?
For fresh vegetable exports, carrots remain the dominant, vegetable export crop. Just under $100 million worth of carrots were exported out of Australia last year and about 113,000 tonnes. So that's up about 7% on the previous year. We've seen some really positive growth in 2018, particularly in the second half of the year in potatoes and onions. So potatoes have bounced back from a relatively soft 2017 export year to be up about 27% in value to $32 million worth of Australian potato exports and up 28% in volume to about 40,000 tonnes. Onions have seen some similar positive growth figures, up around 25% in value to $24 million and around 34,000 tonnes of Australian onions exported to different Asian, Middle Eastern and European markets.
So do those products that have a longer shelf life kind of have an inherent advantage here? Because obviously time can be one of the challenges when you're exporting, I guess, more of the kind of leafy green veg. If you're talking carrots, onions, potatoes, they can tend to last a bit longer.
Yeah, look, carrots, onions and potatoes are traditionally sea freighted to a lot of markets, and they do have, as you pointed out, longer shelf life than some of the more perishable products. However, we are seeing some strong growth figures for other crops that are air freighted, like broccoli and cauliflowers, celery, and even leafy salads, which are traditionally air freighted to some of the closer, I guess, Asian and Middle Eastern markets. But broccoli and cauliflower as a category was up about 30% to 8,500 tonnes and $22 million last year. So that's come off a relatively low base about 4 or 5 years ago to be one of our more meaningful vegetable export crops.
Now, you've mentioned a number of Asian countries which have been some of the big growth markets, so Singapore, Japan, Thailand, those kinds of places. I noticed that China is not on that list, and we hear so much about the opportunities of China. Why isn't China featuring on these lists?
Currently, for fresh vegetables, we don't have very strong market access for a number of different Australian vegetable crops. We do send small amounts of asparagus into China, but one thing we've got to keep in mind is that, you know, China is a big producer of vegetables, so they do have a very high domestic self-sufficiency rate for their fresh vegetable consumption. So given the current lack of access into China, as an industry, we're focusing on trying to develop the markets where we do have access and really capture some of the latent demand that does exist across Asia and the Middle East.
And just finally, we've spoken a lot on the country about the tough season for many sectors of ag, and obviously veggies has been included in that. A lot of people either facing drought or flood, depending on where you are in Australia. Are you expecting that could have the potential to affect upcoming export figures?
Look, I hope not, but it certainly will be a factor, I think, Nikolai. When we've got inclement weather or different conditions that means that yields drop, then that will have an impact on vegetable exports. But one thing when we're looking at the whole vegetable category is that every year, depending on different either weather or market conditions and different market dynamics, means that, you know, we'll see some crops might come off a little bit in terms of their export volumes and some might increase. So when I'm looking at the 3 and 5 year trends of vegetable exports, you know, we have been increasing from about 4 or 5 years ago. We were exporting around $150 to $170 million worth of product, and that's now up to $280. So the general trend is up, and I'm hopeful that will continue in the coming year, even with the potentially tough growing conditions ahead.
Michael Coote, National Manager of Export Developments with AusVeg. Well, now to something that sounds like a no-brainer. Cutting out plastics in fresh produce, it's a win for the environment. But reducing plastics, the wrapping around your cucumber, maybe the plastic bag that your salad now comes in, could end up reducing the shelf life of produce and lead to more food waste. Tackling this dilemma is the new Australian Fresh Produce Alliance, a group that's been formed to try and reduce plastic packaging on produce in a way that's sustainable. CEO of the new group, Michael Rogers, spoke with our reporter, Jody Gunders.
There are a range of challenges in labour, in packaging, but some of those are focused on addressing the growth opportunities. So as something grows, there are a range of challenges that are thrown up. So the companies have got together to work through in a really constructive way to address those challenges facing industry.
People would like to see less plastic, that's clear, and there's a lot of plastic in some fresh produce, but a lot of it's there for a reason. Is there a danger with throwing the baby out with the bathwater?
Yeah, certainly. That's something that we're really looking at. People are concerned about packaging and plastic, but they're also concerned about food waste. And packaging can play a really key role in minimising food waste by extending the shelf life. So when you take the food home, it stores fresher for longer and provides more value for families. So we're looking to understand those issues better and to demonstrate that for consumers and help to bring some balance into that conversation.
So how do you bring balance in? Is it about having different sorts of products, perhaps biodegradable packaging rather than plastic? What do you do?
Yeah, look, there's some of the challenges, and the companies for the last 3 years have been progressively looking at their packaging to improve recyclability and also to look at biodegradable options. And some of the challenges are the higher cost of biodegradable packaging. And so some of the future work is looking at better packaging, ensuring that it's recyclable, and then increasingly looking at biodegradable. So it's a multi-pronged approach and to engage with the community to demonstrate the benefits of packaging and also where packaging is going.
In terms of coming together as an alliance, has that come about because there's been a lot of individual negotiating going on, different companies doing different things, mixed messages? What's been the rationale?
So horticulture is a really diverse industry. There's lots of products, there's lots of growers, and that's a great thing. There's diversity all across Australia. But it also provides a bit of a challenge in everyone coming together. So this group was brought together to bring together some of the key companies, but also some of the key supply chains, working with more than 1,000 growers. So it is a new development, and it reflects the growth in the industry and the opportunity that these companies have come together to say, hey, let's work together to support the growth of the industry overall and address some of these challenges.
You've got some big players here as part of the alliance. What about some of the smaller growers? If changes are made at this level, will those changes flow on to them? Will there be support for smaller growers to make changes?
Yeah, sure. I mean, it's a key challenge. And from the group's perspective, they're working with a range of small growers in commercial arrangements. So, as I said, there are more than 1,000 growers that these 14 companies work with. And so they're very conscious of working with industry more broadly, both those companies that they work with directly, but also the range of players through industry. So everything will be done in consultation with industry more broadly, looking at the challenges that we need to address and working through where we need to go in the long term and how industry can move forward.
This is a very new group. It's just been formed. Tell me a little bit about, in terms of timelines, what you hope to achieve and how soon.
Yeah, look, it is a new group. And one of the key factors is making sure that we move forward sensibly and constructively. And so we've been having a range of conversations with the companies and increasingly with other industry players and with government to make sure that we understand the issues and consider the way forward. So in terms of progress, look, we hope to make some significant steps in terms of packaging and also in labour over the next 6 months. And we have been working with the companies to consolidate what we are doing on packaging, and over the next couple of months hope to work with the retailers and industry more broadly to start sharing some of that work. So look, we are moving forward, but we are doing that in consultation and collaboration with retailers and with government and with growers.
CEO of the new Australian Fresh Produce Alliance, Michael Rogers.
From the paddock to the plate, Countrywide on ABC Radio.
And thanks for your company today. My name's Nikolai Bailharts. Well, the Victorian Farmers Federation is calling for stronger sentencing for those who trespass and steal livestock after an activist was given two $1 fines for stealing a goat from a Gippsland cafe. 70 activists stormed the Gippy Goat Cafe in December, stealing three goats and a lamb and loading them into cars. Two activists were found guilty of the theft and given good behaviour bonds without conviction, while one woman who housed the goat and removed its NLIS identification tag was fined $1 for breaching biosecurity laws and another $1 for removing the tag. Debo Johinki is the president of the Victorian Farmers Federation.
When we sit back and actually look at why we have rules and why what we are trying to achieve by having them, it's an absolute disgrace. The way this is played out and the way that the message that this is sent is actually endorsed people to go out and essentially break the law, because the worst thing that can happen to you is you're going to get a fine that's going to cost you less than a cup of coffee. So what we're actually calling on is the government, the Attorney General, the Premier, to actually stand up and say, well, are we going to protect agriculture? Are we going to do something about these laws? And are we going to make the penalties appropriate to what actually occurred?
Why is it the role of government to step in for when the courts have failed, though?
Well, the Attorney General actually oversees how laws are enacted, and they actually help guide and shape how they're adopted. So we're going to be calling on Jill Hennessy to take that role seriously and actually stand up for ag. And rightly so, because once again, we as agriculture, we want to have this industry in place that, for the next generation. And the way we're coming under attack now, the way we're being treated, is absolutely disgraceful, because we won't be around if this is going to be allowed to occur.
What do you mean when you say the way we're coming under attack now?
Well, if we were any religion or race or creed, if you replace agriculture with any of those things, we would be up in arms as a community. We would be fighting for our rights to be able to practice what we do legally. We would be not having maps claiming that we're exploiting or harming animals, that they would be taken down overnight. But yet in agriculture, we're very passive. In many ways, we're our own worst enemies by not actually rising up against this and crying on the streets that something should be done. And quite frankly, enough's enough. We need the people who were put in place to govern, the people who were put in place to look after us, to now take their responsibility seriously and stand up for us as well.
You're obviously taking aim at the government over this, wanting stronger laws, but these laws themselves carry maximum fines of $9,500 for each breach. A magistrate has decided to fine this individual $1 for each breach and not obviously go to the maximum fine. So why take aim at the government and not the judge?
Oh, no, the judge is a part of this as well. Unfortunately, if judges, they're not democratically elected, so I can't get hold of them, but the people who represent us can. So for me, I totally weigh the responsibility of what the judge has sent at his feet as well, but my lever, my mechanism to get that change is to go through the Attorney General and the government itself, the Premier, to be making this one of his priorities to have this reviewed and make sure that we are getting the penalties to the right level. And if you say that, does the mechanism of the court work? Should we trust the law? Should we not take the law into our own hands? All these things now are being thrown up that, quite frankly, if we're meant to be the passive ones, and we've been telling our members to contact police, and the police did their job, they got the people to court and got them in front of the judge, but yet when the system lets us down, it's really backing us into a corner to really question, what are we here for? Are we actually going to be supported in our, once again, legitimate and legal process? So this is a real cry just for people to take it seriously, for the courts to have a hard look at themselves. But the one stick that we have, the one tool that we do have, is that Attorney General role, and calling for Jill to review the case to make sure that when we have breaches, when we have people take the law into their hands, they're dealt with appropriately, like anyone else in society should be.
Victorian Farmers Federation President David Johinki speaking there with Warwick Long. The large state-of-the-art greenhouse is set to be built in Victoria's northwest to cultivate medicinal cannabis for the domestic and export markets. The Cann Group expects its $130 million project will create the largest purpose-built medicinal cannabis production facility in Australia. Our reporter, Sheree Von Hirschner, spoke with Chief Executive Officer Peter Kroc. He says he expects thousands of tonnes of the product to be grown.
It was always on our radar in terms of a regional expansion plan, but we've decided to move forward with Mildura first because it gives us a fast pathway to construct the new facility, and with the sunlight hours in Mildura it gives us better operating costs, and yeah, we're ready to roll, so we're looking to move quickly.
A state-of-the-art greenhouse is to be constructed in the region. How soon will that begin?
Well, we're just finalising the purchase of the site at the moment, but that then will allow us with early access. We're preparing to bring in materials that will start as soon as we take control of the property.
And how long do you think it'll take before the greenhouse is ready to grow the cannabis?
The greenhouse itself should go up pretty quickly, and we're pushing to have the first of our plants into the facility by the end of this calendar year, but it will be fully commissioned then sequentially through to the third quarter of 2020 is when we expect it to be running at capacity.
Now, talking about the cannabis, how much, what kind of volumes are you expecting to grow?
It's a significant volume. It could be as much as 50,000 kilograms of dry flower equivalent. That will depend on the varieties we're growing and what we're growing it for. The exciting part is this will really accelerate access for Australian patients to medicinal cannabis.
And in terms of the varieties, can you explain that further?
Well, cannabis plants are a complex plant. They're a key cannabinoid for the active constituent that has the medicinal activity. So we've found that, or as it expands around the world and focus is moving on to medicinal cannabis, it's understood that the complex nature of the cannabinoids are useful in a number of conditions, everything from epilepsy, which everyone's seen, and that's been a big focus for the Victorian government on treating epilepsy in children, but through to pain and people suffering from cancer and other issues. There are different forms of cannabis that's useful for that.
And in growing cannabis, how easy is it to grow?
Cannabis grows like a weed, so it grows quickly, but it's not necessarily easy to grow without introduction of disease and pest pressure, and that's why we're building a state-of-the-art greenhouse to ensure that we can grow high-quality, reproducible product that's fit for medical use.
In terms of growing the plants in this greenhouse, where will they be processed?
There'll be some initial processing on site in Mildura, but we expect the bulk of the GMP processing will be done with a partner of ours in Melbourne, IDT. So we'll be working between the two sites.
And in terms of markets, you talk about the domestic market. What about with exports? What are your plans there?
We've partnered with Aurora Cannabis out of Canada, who are expanding rapidly around the world. They now operate in 24 countries. And that's where we'll be focusing with them, is looking to move the high-quality Australian product into markets such as Europe and Asia that are looking for the Australian quality stamp on the product.
How much of a demand is there within Australia for this?
In Australia, the bulk of people using cannabis for medical purposes are unfortunately having to source it from the illicit market, from the black market. We are aiming to turn that around and give them an option that's medical grade as soon as possible. So, and the estimates are that there are probably well over 100,000 people in Australia who are trying to access cannabis and are having to resort to illicit market.
Cann Group CEO Peter Kroc speaking there with Sheree Von Hirschner. And for today, that is Countrywide. Remember, you can head to our website and find more details of all the stories you've heard today, abc.net.au/rural. My name's Nikolai Bahlhartz, and I'll speak to you again next time.